Welcome to the Passion and Soul Podcast, an exploration of personal and interpersonal desire, faith, and connection. Your host, international sexuality and spirituality author and educator, Lee Harrington of PassionandSoul.com, will take you on a sultry and intellectual journey through the soul of intimate experience. Take a moment and breathe deep and get ready for an adventure. This podcast is a chance to glimpse into the ever-increasing diverse world of alternative life. The Passion and Soul Podcast is intended for mature audiences. If you are offended by adult topics or prohibited by law, we recommend you stop listening right now.
Hello, fellow adventurers of sexuality and spirit, and welcome to the Passion and Soul Podcast with Lee Harrington of PassionandSoul.com. For those of you who are regular listeners, you'll know that we've taken a two-month break, and I am delighted to come back with some great interviews that we have had over the last 2 months, because sometimes life gets in the way. Sometimes the things we had planned in life and the amazing things we had set up just end up not quite being available, end up not having time in our lives, because as amazing as they are, other opportunities pop up and other delicious things and other challenges present themselves. For me, it's been a great opportunity to have a moment of connection and compassion with those in my world who have had similar journeys, because it's not necessarily a bad thing to have to set aside plans that we had. Sometimes it's about having profound compassion for ourselves. That's been one of my daily reminders, one of my little self rituals, is that notion that self-care is sexy. Self-care is sexy. It is a beautiful thing to remember day to day. And as we look into this amazing interview we're going to be looking at today that has been sitting here, and I am so profoundly grateful to those who have been sitting and waiting for it. It's something that I have looked at in our society at large, because right now self-care is hard when for some of us, day-to-day literal survival is hanging in the balance. When there are people in our communities that by being Black, by being trans, by being financially insecure in our day-to-day experiences, the notion of thriving is so hard when we are surviving. Now, for those of us who are listening at home or driving around for a long commute to somewhere, it might be like, oh, those things aren't that hard. I cope with them. But those who are listening on buses because you can't afford your car, for those of you who are taking the time to listen to this between your three jobs because you have five kids at home and there's no one else to help, thank you. Thank you for being here, and thank you for taking the time to work on not just surviving, but thriving, to take care of yourself, to take care of yourself between those moments. And for those of you who are working from a place of privilege, whether that is racial privilege or cisgender privilege, and remembering that cisgender is not a bad word, it simply means same. Your gender is the same as what you were assigned at birth. For those of you who are working from a place of financial advantage, for those of you who are living such lives, I encourage you, donate to charities that can't. Donate your time and energy. Go and drop off canned food to your local food bank. Effect change, because you can. Because you are in a place of doing so. And with that, I am so grateful to bring on the voice of the delicious Taisha Best, who is making change every day, both by the activism that she does and also by being herself. For those who don't know her, Taisha Best has been in the leather community for over 10 years, from moving online as a Korean slave to being one of the names that I would argue is becoming ubiquitous with leather today. She has been the calendar editor for Leatherati.com, the policies and procedures chair for the National Leather Association International, and has also helped other organizations through both official and unofficial positions on a local and national level. A founding member of the Dallas Girls of Leather, who has aided other girl groups that have formed over the years, Taisha currently serves as the media coordinator for IML, the third woman to ever wear the wingman as a back patch. She's also the assistant editor-in-chief for Leatherati.com, the co-chair and bylaws committee of the Southeast Onyx Pearls, and the secretary for National Leather Association International. She's volunteered and judged for several contests, lending her voice as a non-title holder, anthropology-loving, and self-educated historian, while also teaching on a variety of classes, such as leather history from women's perspectives and iconography, race and race relations, intersectionality, social media and branding, and Women of Drummer. She is a member of Mama's Family and was awarded the Pantheon of Leather Award for the Florida region, while also having been gifted the NLA International Steve Madoff Award for her service on the international level. Taisha currently resides in Wilton Manors, Florida, and is beta to her sir, Kirk Rubin, and her alpha, William Ferkel, and big sister to Jacob McManus. We start out our conversation in this flowing, delicious experience by talking about IMSL, which is International Ms. Leather, and our personal experiences on that journey. And we're going to start out in this interview right there as we flow back and forth. And welcome to getting to be a fly on the wall in the conversations that I am gifted in getting a chance to be part of.
Becoming an event that I actually don't mind returning to, because this year was the first time I returned to IMSL in 5 years. Like, my first experience at IMSL was horrific.
What happened?
I didn't enjoy it. It was, at the time, I don't think I was mentally and emotionally strong enough to deal with the amount of flirtation from the butches. Like, it was very heavily butch.
Yeah.
And it was, like, cruising central, and I was like, I couldn't handle it. And then on top of that, it was my first event that was so strong female oriented, and I come mostly from the gay male community, that I just was like, this is so much, and all y'all just want to fuck me, and I can't live for this, so bye. I was done. I was like, I can't. This is too much. This is too much estrogen in this room. All y'all's crazy. Yeah.
It was, oh my gosh.
So then it was Sharon, Pat, and actually Slave Tabitha that actually convinced me, because I almost turned down judging. I was like, I don't want to judge. No, I don't want to come. No. And they're like, but. And then Tabitha was like, I will hang out with you. You can stick around me. It'll be okay. And then I went, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is actually really fun. Okay. Maybe it was the producers. Okay, this is really fun. And then other things have occurred since then. Like, Asia and I have been talking every day since then. So that's becoming a thing. And that's, yeah. So I'm glad I came. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm glad I came. So, but yeah, I just, you know, for me, I'm still learning to navigate predominantly female spaces, because that's just never been something that I've had the opportunity to experience up until maybe like a couple years ago, in a healthy way, to where I'm healthy in a healthy space to do it.
Right.
And the women at the event are also healthy towards me.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. it's my dance has been kind of in the opposite direction because I was involved in the women's community. I used to be on the board of Bad Girls of Portland for a little while and all that kind of stuff, right? Like it was quite a dance. And then when I transitioned, there were certain events that kept inviting me. And I'm like, okay, so, and they weren't trans, like they weren't women and trans events. They were women's events. And I'm like, I'm getting mixed messages that are very confusing. Like, either you are not seeing my gender reality or you're confused because you're inviting me, but not inviting trans women. We need to talk.
Yeah. That's going to be a no.
Yeah. So I've had these dances over the last 10 years of trying to navigate. And mind you, it's gotten less and less because part of the story was, and I completely understand it, is folks like Spencer, right, who was IMSL and is still really embedded in the women's community because that was their home community.
Right.
And just because of somebody's gender reality, to take away all of their support network when following their body and mental reality, like, that's heartbreaking. So I understand it for folks like Spencer, but for me, I was like, okay, this is awkward. So yeah, I finally started to come back to women's events in the last 5 years, because for those first 5 years, I'm like, I can't be confusing you and you can't be confusing me. Like, I need a break.
Yeah, you have to like set the boundaries so that people could see the transition, see it in so many different angles so that they take it into the fact that, okay, this is me, Harrington. He is male identified now.
Yep.
Okay. Like.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And on top of that, having the, I've also only started doing drag in the last 2 years, even though I did drag privately, right, for a long time. And I occasionally did shows in like everywhere from burlesque to drag genre pre-transition, because when I tried to do it post-transition, I would have spent 2 years getting people to use the right pronouns and then one night of appearing in drag. And now I'm doing another 2 years
and they're
of
like-
my work. Right, because
gender is so hard.
Yeah,
you know, I actually there's been some like flight attendant trips that I've worked that I've actually had to give a few trans identity educational experiences to some people, because we'll have unaccompanied minors come on the plane. And depending on the city and route, like, they're like, I don't know what gender he is. I don't know. I was like, well, the first thing you should do probably would be the smart thing, which is ask them. Like, hi, how are you? How would you like to go? What is your name? What would you like for us to call you? And they usually will tell you, if it's Sam, call them Sam.
Yep.
And if you're referring to Sam, the easiest way to err is call them they or Sam. Yeah.
Or say the kid in the blue shirt in row 4. Yeah. Like,
like, call them Sam. Call them how they want to be called. But don't be like, oh, hey, you, her, he, person. Like, way to go. Because, I also told them, like, I worked with Gender Odyssey for years, their registration team.
Yeah.
I actually learned a crap ton from Gender Odyssey with the short time that I was with them. But what I learned is the fact that kids know who they are very early on. They know.
After Taisha and I dealt with some technical issues, we then had a chance to pick up talking about her recent move to Florida.
This is the first time I've lived by myself in my own apartment in 8 or 9 years. So it's I've had roommates. I mean, what started it was the divorce. So it's literally been like an 8-year journey of getting back to like, this is me. This space is mine. Mm-hmm. This is all mine. I don't have any roommates. So, I tell people, I was like, my journey, like when people say a divorce, it takes like 5 years to recover. I absolutely believe it, because it's not just financially, but it's just like emotionally, physically, like, you know, I'm dating one person now. I can't even call it dating because I don't date, but I'm seeing this international title holder now. And this is the first time I've been dating in over 8 years. Like, I shut down everything. It was like community, 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 leadership, community, community, community. No, I'm not interested in you. Community, community, community. Like how Lady Gaga was like, practice, perform, perform, practice. That was me.
Yeah.
It was what I did best at the time.
Right.
So, yeah, it was crazy. It's still crazy. Like it, but I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it, but it's crazy. It's crazy.
Oh, darling. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's this thing. Nomadic part of me that has had the journey that I'm like, oh, yes. Like,
sleep, teach, fly, sleep, teach. Oh, I forgot to eat. Teach.
I actually have written into my agreements with people that if I am not bringing my own person with me, or if I do not have close friends in your area, you will assign me somebody that if my water bottle is turned over, it means it's empty and somebody will refill it. And that if I have done anything for more than 3 hours, somebody will not ask me, do you need food? They will bring me a muffin and put it in my hand. Yeah. Like, it's written into my agreements with people nowadays, because I will do the same thing. Like, I did a weekend that through my own mishap of scheduling, I ended up doing a couple of days at Beat Me in St. Louis and then flying on Sunday morning up to LLC and teaching 2 more classes at LLC. So it was 4 classes, 2 classes, 1 weekend plus play parties, plus then connecting with people afterwards and then going up to Anna. Like, it was just stupid. And Goddess Lakshmi accidentally did the same thing too. So we're both on the same 5 a.m. flight.
Like, why did we do this
and,
for ourselves?
And that's when I set my line, is like, no, really, even if I think I'm not hungry, you will have somebody put food in my hand.
Yeah, yeah. And that was actually something that I told Pat and Sharon. They were like, what are your weaknesses? What are your flaws? What are you afraid of? And I was like, here's what I've run into. Like, I don't eat. I forget to eat. Sometimes I forget to go to the bathroom. Like, mm-hmm. if I'm overstimulated, brings like one person to me, have them hang out with me in a corner, or you will not see me the rest of the day. Because if I get overstimulated, I usually have to retreat to my room because I'm so introverted. And a lot of people don't realize that about me, is because even though I'm outgoing in person, it's because I have a job to do.
Right.
I have a responsibility. But if I was to be put in a conference or a social situation where I was there just to be social, you bet your ass I'm going to be somewhere in a corner being like, oh.
Right.
Okay. Okay, don't come over here. Don't come over here. Don't come.
That's the other thing that
I'm so shy.
Well, then you might appreciate this trick that I learned a couple of years ago, which is find someone that you can whisper to them, I need to go from here to here, make me look busy, and I will literally be turning towards the person and talking avidly about anything while walking to the other end of a con. Because otherwise I get, and I have a feeling you do this too, like you get stopped every 10 feet. And yep. So finding anyone that you can turn to and be like, you need to walk me to class, pretend that you're a hall monitor.
No, like walk me to the bathroom. I ran into that situation now that I'm media coordinator of IML. I've run into this situation where I'm trying to use the bathroom. Mm. And an hour and a half later, I'm still like maybe 20 feet closer. But I still haven't used the bathroom.
Yeah.
So, I'm like you. I travel for certain events. I travel with family only. Like, if they're not going, my butt isn't going.
Uh-huh.
And then they know. They're like, if she has to use the bathroom or she has to eat, that's it. Like, my alpha is like, move out the way. She's coming. She has to go. Like, he is... choo-choo train, like bulldog, like getting me to where I need to be, because if not, I'm like, I get hangry.
Yeah.
And then that's the angry black woman no one wants to see, because mm-hmm. I'm like hollering for some collard greens or something. It's just like bad news everywhere. But yeah, I definitely can relate to that. It's been quite a journey to get to the point to where you get stopped every 10 feet to talk about any and everything that they feel like they want to talk about, and you're just like it's crazy.
I did not understand why Midori would sometimes go off site to have dinners until I was hanging out with Catherine Gross, and she and I sat down at some con or another to just have like salads at lunchtime. And people, like, we're in a corner having a meal, clearly engaged in conversation with another. And I think we had four people interrupt lunch. And we're like, we just want a salad.
I actually don't eat on site. Yeah. Yeah, I try either A, I eat off site, or B, I actually eat in my room.
Yeah.
Like, we order Postmates or Uber Eats and we'll eat in our room. But it's a balance because both my sir and Alpha are extroverts.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to pick and choose. And I'm like, they want to go out. Okay, we're going to go out, but we're not eating in the hotel.
There you go.
Because nothing. Yeah. I won't even get to the table. So.
Well, and luckily IML is near enough stuff, like restaurants and whatnot, that you have options.
Yeah, absolutely. IML and Claw.
Yeah.
Claw was really awesome this year. I found a really great pho spot. And I had some of the best pho I've ever had.
That's
in my
awesome.
Life. So,
I love it. I've never gotten to go to Claw. I've heard really great things about it. Boy Meat goes all the time, but I haven't gone ever, and it makes me sad.
So every Claw and every MAL, I boot black. So I boot black at Claw and I teach at Claw usually.
Okay.
For the past 2 or 3 years now. But I actually got laid there this year. I was like, I'm getting action too.
Which, by the way, I appreciated your sex and leadership post the other day. That was, yeah, thank you.
I was, you know, and it's not like I was telling those who were quiet about their sex to, like, do the opposite of what they're doing.
Right.
I was trying to inform everyone that this is leather, and it's leather sex, mm-hmm. and it's political, and it's radical. So we need to stop assimilating to the patriarchal instances of what leadership is in the Muggle community. Like, this whole, and it's very, you know, leadership in America is very white. I'll just say it. Mm-hmm. Leadership in America is very white, straight, male, 45 plus.
Yeah.
Leather is not white, straight, male, 45 plus. So why are you going to take the same leadership aspects of Muggle America and apply it to leather? How does that make sense? So right. I was really trying to give a different perspective on what radical leadership is in a subculture that is very radicalized. Mm. And not radicalized in terms of a negative radicalization, but a radicalization of we are bucking against the status quo in order to maintain who we are as a collective identity.
Right.
So if who we are as a collective identity is leather sex, then your leadership is going to have some sort of sex in it. Like, even if you're the quiet, shy, like, I'm a lady, I don't be talking about sex at the dinner table. Or if you're like some other friends who are like, man, my hole is like the most busted ass glazed donut you have ever eaten in your life. Like, both are extremely healthy aspects of being a leather person, and neither should be judged. So when you judge those things, you're actually trying to force us to assimilate back in a Muggle society that didn't even like us in the first place. So why would you do that? Like, I have to keep reminding people, okay, like, the Muggle community is not what leather is. Like, why are we trying? Okay, come back to the fold. Be the black sheep. Like, come on, let's be the rebels. No, you don't want to be like them.
Well, but I think it's people so have that. I think people have that internalized. You know, whether we consider it homophobia, leather phobia, whatever it is, right? It's just gotten so internalized for most people that they end up suppressing themselves before somebody nastier beats them to it.
And you know what? And I was just talking with a fellow, he happens to be a gay JetBlue pilot, who every once in a while we'll run into each other and he takes me home for my commute. And we were talking about how the Gay Marriage Act actually caused for a lot more gay assimilation without many of them realizing it, because they realized, oh, I'm married, I can have a family, white picket fence. Bye, gay culture. Peace out. I'm going to be a parent and that's it. And I'm like, you can still be gay and be a parent. Like, mm-hmm. you can still have that gay culture while raising children. You don't have to, like, go back in the closet to have kids. Like, And there are some instances to where, oh, I have to hide my identity in order to have kids and blah, blah, blah. But what I'm talking about is basic, like, oh, I don't go to pride parades now. Gay marriage has happened. We are just a loving, just male-male couple. Would you like some more sugar with your tea? No, like, if you were a radical gay person, then stay being a radical gay person. Like, the Gay Marriage Act wasn't given to us so we could behave more like straight people. And that's how I feel like a lot of gay people have veered towards, is the fact that, oh, this is how I can be accepted more by the straight people. No, they still don't like you. It's just the law forced them to tolerate you. That is a completely different mindset. They still don't like you. And they now especially don't like you because they think you're raising more of y'all. So why would you think that they are going to welcome you with open arms if they fought so hard for you to not get married in the first place? What, a law changed their whole mindset overnight?
Yeah.
Like, really? And then not only did that happen, it's like now that the predominantly gay white men culture was able to find a little more acceptance in the mainstream society, they forgot to help the others behind them that are still marginalized. So I think that's part of the reason why we're having a lot of backlash, especially in the leather community now when it comes to race politics, is because for the pretty pink bubble now exists for most of the gay community. For most of the gay community, they have voting rights, they have the Marriage Equality Act, like they have all they need to live their life happily. But you have other marginalized populations like the transgender population, the black population, the black transgender population, young black men. Like, we are still not at y'all level. Why would y'all leave us behind, like, at the bus stop? It's like y'all were able to get on the bus and y'all waved to us as we were left behind being beaten up. Like, that's not how a community operates in my head. So,
well, and seeing during the fight for equal marriage, seeing folks who were undocumented workers get shut down, seeing trans voices getting shut down at the rallies, right? Yeah. This isn't even like on the internet or people just happen to not be involved. They're right there.
Yeah. It feels like a lot of unaware people step over the casualties that are still existent in our community. Because they're like, well, I got my own. I got me and mine. Me and mine. It's time for me to go. Oh, you over there, you hurt? Yeah, I'm going to go. I got to go to the bread store to pick up blah, 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 blah. Sorry. Like, that's kind of how it feels. And they're not realizing that because they're not aware of their own privileges, especially the new additional privilege they got, is setting us further apart from each other, and they're forgetting that they are still a marginalized population. It's just the law is working for them first, and us next, and you third, and you fourth, and maybe they'll get to the trans men and women. Maybe. Maybe they'll get to them. Maybe how many more people have to die? Maybe they'll get to them. Like, and they're not realizing that we're still a family here, especially in the leather community. We're still a family here. Just because you guys have more privileges doesn't mean you are supposed to forget about it. Like, there's no way you can forget about us. We're still here. We're still showing up to classes. We're still showing up to conferences. We're still volunteering for conferences. We're still volunteering for y'all at the conferences. Like, I don't know. It's just bizarre.
I do, like, it. It's both baffling and yet I understand the perpetuation of where it's coming from, of folks who also end up turning towards the leather community from the general gay population that have gotten their equal, like the marriage piece to go through, who end up saying, you're making us look bad.
And it could also be that because we rely on the cis gay male population so much to be allies, that they could just be taking a breath. And some people deserve to take a breath, but that doesn't mean you step away completely. And that's what I feel is happening mostly. I think some have taken a breath because it's like, Oh my goodness, this was such a hard battle. Oh man, we got to enjoy and smell the roses for a little bit, and then we got to pick it right back up because we're not finished. Not everyone is here with us. Like, and versus the oh, we're done. All right, punch it out. We quit. Bye. You know, so I have to give props to those who still are so aware of themselves that they do have to take a break, but that they know the work is not done. I have to give major props to them, and I give major props to those allies who do so much emotional labor, even though it's not about them. I still have to give major props about that, because emotional labor doesn't discriminate in the sense that if you're here for me, you're here for me. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here for me. If you need to take a break, that's fine. I can hold on for however I need to hold on. Just don't forget me. Just don't forget me. But thank you.
Right.
Thank you so much for what you've done already. Yeah. Yeah. So I kind of have to balance it. I kind of have to be like, I can't be angry at y'all for needing a break. But
right.
I'm also still Taisha is still really tired, really exhausted, and I'm getting more angry because I feel like I'm still left behind, and I feel like I am still fighting so hard to be who I am, where I am at currently, while still trying to dream.
Right.
Like, dreaming is hard work. For marginalized populations, I think I can't imagine what it's like to be a trans person who has goals and dreams, but they can't even think about them right now because they're still trying to live.
Yeah. When survival is
you
on the table, dreaming is
when
hard.
Survival is the highest top priority.
Mm-hmm.
Like, forget trying to buy a fucking house. Like, I'm trying to walk down this street where I know three of my sisters and brothers died just based on their gender. I'm just trying to walk down the street. Like, forget trying to put away for a new car. I'm just trying to get home from work that they don't even pay me enough for what I do because they just can't tolerate my gender, and therefore my academic background isn't as valid and as good a quality. Like, So again, the intersectionality of what it's like to struggle,
mm-hmm.
like there's Black struggle, there's trans struggle, there's so much struggle on so many different levels that it breaks my heart as a Black woman who's also trying to dream, as I realize how much harder it is for a trans person, a black trans person, to want dreams, but to wake up the morning and see their sister two blocks down in a mortuary, according to this article. And then the next day, another sister, a state over, in the mortuary.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, it's so much. It's so much. And, you know, I have to remind people, and I do these posts on Facebook, I have to remind people to stop and smell the roses. Remember what you already have. Be happy for it so that you don't get lost in it. You don't get lost in a struggle. So remember to laugh. Remember to love those who love you so much. Thank them and love them so much so that they can continue loving you. And take a breath.
Right.
Like, even if that means going to Disney World, even if that means going down and getting some froyo, even if that means, like, having someone bring over an apple pie, even if that means someone like me, may I have chicken for the first time in a year? I'm really needing it right now. Oh, I can have chicken. This is the best gift ever in my life. Like, but it makes me so happy, and it makes me forget, and it makes me have time to dream, and those little glimpses of happiness I can dream. Like, oh my God, what would it be like to finally publish these three books that have been on my stove for like 3 years now? I've been trying to publish these books. And then that bubble disappears because it's back to the struggle, right? So it's like everyone is working so that people can breathe in various instances. Everyone is working and taking shifts to breathe and then get back in it.
Right.
Okay. It's your turn to breathe. I love you. Hugs, hugs, kiss, kiss. Go do your thing. Go be happy. Okay. I'm fighting for you. I'm fighting for you. You back? Okay. My turn. Tag out. That's how it feels, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And what I love is the folks coming back.
Because
yes! There is that percentage that doesn't.
Yeah, the persistence. She persisted. They're resilient. He persisted. He's resilient. He didn't forget. that issue still is there. He remembered that issue. He's still posting about it. Like, those posts from people who are like, just because we're quiet about it doesn't mean we forgot it. Y'all are still ratchet.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love it when people don't forget us. I love it when people don't forget the marginalized population. And it's not the fact, it's not that I'm trying to paint us as the victim. I'm trying to make them aware of where they are in terms of privilege versus where we are in terms of privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And the distance that's widening due to current social, cultural, political experiences that are happening in America. Yeah, that's and my thing.
It's it's really interesting, though, because when we look at like social media and just the news in general, it feels at this point like the news just keeps coming. Like every single day, there's another 12 things that we can be angry and sorrowful for at the same time. And to remember, like to actually just separate that out and be like, oh, wait, there is a rose there that came today. And actually seek those pieces of joy out at the same time.
Yeah.
I loved the idea that my partner gave me that I've really been integrating, which is being adult means the capacity to fully feel two emotions simultaneously.
Yeah.
To have that joyousness that something beautiful is there and yet still hold that sorrow, rage, or action. Like you can do both. It doesn't have to be or, it can be and.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad you said that because, my friend Sadie, who's visiting with me now, there have been times where I called her just crying. She's like, why are you crying? Are you sad? I was like, I'm happy. I'm so happy I'm crying because I'm so scared that my happiness won't last, but it's lasted so long that I'm so used to the struggle that I'm literally bucking the struggle stereotype. Like, okay, Ty, you've gone over this mountain. You don't have to like push yourself back over the mountain because you're used to climbing a mountain, right? So like, for me, that whole double emotion thing is I'm angry at what's still happening in America, but I'm crying, like hardcore crying, because I'm realizing that I'm now a middle class black woman. And I'm not on welfare, and I don't have food stamps. I just moved into my own apartment, and I'm successful, and I'm happy. And it's okay for a black woman to be successful, happy, middle-class woman. It is okay. And you don't have to keep reaching towards the struggle demon. You don't have to keep making those mistakes only because that's what makes you comfortable. Like, you don't have to keep going towards the baby daddy thing. You don't have to keep going towards ignoring those red flags and therefore domestic abuse. You don't have to keep going towards the, well, this triggers me and therefore I'm going to keep doing it. So, you know, that's a good lesson that my friend Sadie and my friend Kirk has taught me is...
As if manifested perfectly on time. This is when goddess Sadie Hawkins walked into the room along with Jessica Booz. Now, these things sometimes happen in all kinds of different conversations, and that is what happened here today. They popped up in the background, and in the following segment of the interview, you'll hear their voices from time to time.
Yeah,
I was just sharing. I said, you know, your book, your last Sacred King book, you wrote a... You have a part in there about the fee at Fair Energy Exchange.
Yeah.
So that has been my motto for probably the past year. And it has become my template for when I write to people. And I just write it out and then I tell them what book and what page. So I don't have to school them on that. So
oh my God, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. Actually, I've been so... you guys know... Do you guys know Kona? Because I know she does a lot of leather circuit stuff. So she occasionally posts like these long diatribes as responses on my thing. And then at the very bottom, she'll be like, that'll be $5. And if I actually just got a paycheck, I send her $5.
You know, I have another friend, Mark Montgomery. He does that. Cause it's like, pay us for our academic like work. I actually had another person email me and they're like, why are you not like a sociologist or a lawyer? Like, the work that you do on
Facebook, that's energy.
It's super
energy.
Professional, and it's a lot of energy exchanging, and you should be asking people for money. Like Lucy is in science, should be flipping over, and you should be getting a lot of coins.
Well,
like,
it's funny. I actually have a little at the very bottom of the first page of my website. Actually, it's on the bottom of all my pages, I think. But it has a little tiny thing that says, do you like something here? Here is the tip jar. Click. And you know what? $5 here and there, that's a coffee. That's a lunch. That's a, and it adds up. So to me, I'm
that's
a big fan right
paper.
Now. Of just, well, putting a place where people have the power and the choice to be able to give, because you're going to have folks who just had that paycheck and are like, you know what, that thing, that post, I needed to see that today.
Right.
Because like your thing, I was just telling Taisha about the seeing the sex and leadership piece. I was like, oh, I needed to read that today. Thank you. And it's one of the things I love social media for, right? It's like you don't know what's going to hit somebody.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The unexpected roses. Mm. That was an unexpected rose for a lot of people. But Ken Kennedy's post was the reason why I made that post. So it was an unexpected rose for me. I was like, even though I don't talk about my sex life publicly, I do fight for the middleman. And I love hearing sexy, juicy, raunchy fucking stories on Facebook. Because, no, I don't want to hear how Trump is still a motherfucking stupid man. I want to hear how your hole got destroyed and how you cruised successfully and how you are now just had a threesome and how you now are just able to, like, lockjaw. Like, I want to hear all the crazy shit. Like, I want to hear the things that make me a leather woman and not some beat-down, broke black woman who's living in a racist America. Like...
Unfortunately, Goddess Sadie and Jessica had to head out the door, and so we had to cut into this. But having had this rich dialogue around working around in culture, we ended up shifting over to the story of Taisha's back piece that was carved by Phoenix B that covered a wide variety of life experiences. But I'm going to let her tell it better.
No, the whole, like, the whole roses thing, I actually, in our household, we call that poly guacamole, because I had this, this is a couple years ago, I had this really hot evening playdate set up that, like, it was in the Castro area, so, like, he literally took me in a straitjacket to go grocery shopping, and, like, it was crazy, and he had me in these, like these industrial metal handcuffs that had like 9 chains behind them and had a bank timer vault lock on them. So you had to open them in a certain hour of time in the morning or the evening and it wouldn't open up otherwise. Like he couldn't get into them. And we did this crazy scene involved, like it started out with me making him this giant feast, right? That just involved all of this, both Basque and Mexican inspired food from my mom's family. And it was just really yummy. And afterwards, like we have this hot scene, this great night of fun. And then I'm done with it, right? And fast forward 3 days, I'm at Beyond the Edge Cafe, whatever the kink cafe is in San Francisco. I was trying to name the name for the Seattle one. But anyway, I was still in San Francisco, and this woman who I don't know walks up to me and is like, oh my God, you make great guacamole. And I'm like, hi, woman who I think I've met in an event twice in passing. And it turns out it's this guy's other lover who came over the night after our play date and was like, oh, he was like, here, eat all this leftover food that Lee made during our scene.
That's hysterical.
So for her, it was the roses of actual food that sustained her because he and I had a hot date.
Yeah. The residual, like, happiness ripple effect going on. Like, you did this with them, and then this happened, and this is why I now know you. Like, and that happened to me last night. Like, I had guests over last night, and I cooked dinner for guests for the first time in, like, several years, too. And she didn't know me until I lifted my shirt off my back, and she's like, you're the girl with the rose garden! Oh, my God! It's so great to meet you! Like, she, like, had a moment. And it was, like, coming full circle for her because she was telling me, like, she's been following me
my journey via my back since my first Rove.
Wow.
8 or 9 years ago that I started all these carvings. And so it was so wonderful to hear that kind of feedback. She was practically in tears. She was like, I read all your writings about it, you know, and it's such beautiful work. Mm. And I'm now getting one done by Phoenix. And it was a blessing for me because I didn't even have to, my journey is still being told, not even from me, but from my artwork on my back. I don't even have to raise a finger or tell a word, but, you know, FetLife and Phoenix B, my story is there, even though I'm not. And so, you know, I'm glad I can inspire people in that way, and that she got to meet me in person. So I was thrilled.
Yeah.
A little too shocked because how her reaction when I lifted up the shirt, it was like immediate reaction, like, you're the girl! Like, and I was like, oh, I was fine, you're fine, it's okay. And I gave her a hug, and she was just like, it was really nice to have that exchange of energy. It was like just pure unadulterated joy of just like meeting someone like an author of your favorite book.
Mm-hmm.
And you finally get to meet them in person and you just try not to fall out, pass out, pee your pants, like say something awkward.
Oh my God. Really, I love that.
Really preparing yourself. And then it happens and it's just like, oh.
So what was the story? Cause I don't think I've ever heard the actual story of your roses.
So this began as, I don't even think I was Phoenix B's demo bottom. It was at a South Plains Leather Fest, SPLF, yeah, back in the day when I was still in Dallas. And I didn't want to do tattoos because I'm dark skinned and I didn't want to be cliche. And I'm always the girl that's like, I want something unique. And so Phoenix B happened to be in town. I think he was asking for a demo bottom or something, and I couldn't be the demo bottom, but I still wanted to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And Phoenix was like, okay, well, draw something up for me. So I ran to a mutual friend who actually was a tattoo artist, and I was like, well, I'm part of Sigma Alpha Iota, which roses is our thing in that music fraternity, and roses is a lot to me. And so my friend drew up 3 roses with thorns and petals and everything. And so I presented it to Phoenix, and Phoenix knew that I was spiritual because I'm an ex-preacher's kid. That will always be with me. And Phoenix was like, why? Phoenix did the whole spiritual route with it, which was great for me. And Phoenix was like, why are you getting this done? I was like, this represents the beginning of my submissive journey. And each rose represents a significant event of the beginning part of my submissive journey. So this was when I was a Gorian slave. This was when I found NLA. This was when I found Vincent Andrew. And so literally Phoenix carved it all out. And he was saying, you know, think of those things as I'm doing work on your back. So that became 3 sessions. The second session happened in Seattle. And those 2 roses, I believe, or was it 3? It was either 2 or 3. Those roses represented me running from my ex-husband to save my life.
Mm.
Not being able to graduate because I had to save my life. I was in my last semester of college. All I have is 16 hours of Spanish. But I can always come back for a degree. In my head, I was like, I can always come back for a degree, but I can't unbury myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran. Head moved, and then I found the Seattle community. So that was when I began my healing process, and that was also when I started the Leather Girl Handbook, what it was called back then. That was the beginning of when I started the Leather Girl Handbook, because I was also at the time a ward to Vincent Andrews, who's the author of the Leather Boy Handbook. So I had been with him for quite some time, and so that was the second set. And then the third set closed it out. That signified the end of Vince and I's DS guardianship wardship, and that signified the end of me healing from my broken marriage and my brokenness as a submissive and my brokenness as a Black woman.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of finished out the submissive side of my journey to where I could return back to my true identity, which was that of a switch through and through. And the last session was probably the most painful, and I probably cried the most because it was literally the culmination of all the other roses and just finally being able to push to move completely out of that unhealthy identity and into this brand new girl that was about to embark to Fort Lauderdale, where I live now, and just begin anew. And so that's kind of the story of my back. I keloid perfectly. Mm-hmm. So it's like Braille. They're all raised perfectly. You can see every detail of the rose and the thorn and the petals and the markings of what makes the petal and all of that. And I want more work done, but that's going to take a little bit more of negotiating with Sir that I have. And, cause I want like roses and poison ivy kind of to go all the way down on my right side, right hand of power kind of thing. But, that's kind of the story of my roses. I wrote a poem about it and I sent it to Phoenix about how he carved away all of my pain. He carved away all of my abuse. He carved away all of my fear, all of my tears. I wrote that poem crying. Then I sent it to Phoenix. Phoenix read the poem crying. So it was just like all this. It was again some cleansing on my side. I sent it to Phoenix as a thank you for delivering me from such an abysmal beginning of my adulthood. What I thought was an amazing part of my adulthood had such significant setback, but yet it also had such significant freeing moments, because had I not met Vincent, I wouldn't be here where I am right now when it comes to leadership in the community and the knowledge and history that I hold. So out of the ashes, which is why I have a phoenix on my back, came this Black queen that I am today that can look people in the eye and talk, which I didn't used to be able to do. And I can speak verbally how I feel on the inside far better than I used to. And I can feel my emotions without them being so overwhelming that I self-harm, not physically, but emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole self-esteem, self-confidence is, you know, I wouldn't be where I am. And Kirk has picked up the reins and done such an amazing job by banning me from fried chicken, but he's there's so many other things he's done for me that he picked up where Vincent left off, and I've grown so much. Being able to celebrate my Black beauty, I have to thank Kirk and William and my family for being able to exist in my Blackness without my Blackness telling me that I'm too ugly for it. That's been a journey. And basically my journey now is living as a beautifully Black woman, not living as a beautiful woman, but living as a beautiful Black woman. Because the struggle of being woke as a Black woman for me has been super hard because of my past and growing up in white America and growing up as a sheltered preacher's kid and growing up as a victim of domestic abuse and growing up as a victim of child abuse and growing up and growing and growing and growing and growing. So I did all this growing, but I never really celebrated all the milestones that made me who I am. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm like celebrating. I'm finding like, oh, this yellow looks great on me. I'm going to wear this yellow. This afro. Oh, this. You want me to take pictures in this afro? What? Oh, I'm a Black woman. Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. I'm a Black woman. Yes. Color. Woo. Get me. Oh, you want me to post them? Well, they are kind of cute. I'll post them. Oh, my God. They love them. Like, you revelation of that I am more than just a pretty smart girl, that I am a well-educated, woke, Black woman who is unapologetic, who is emotional, who is loving, who is loved, who has no fear of going back to where she was. You know, it's been a lot. You know, and so I have to tell people when they're like, you're just so amazingly beautiful and you just do this so amazingly great and blah, blah, blah. I was like, if you knew all the labor that it took to get me to where this is, you'd be buying me some ice cream and massaging my feet. Where's my palm fan? Like, but I can't do that because I got to catch this flight and go to this conference and teach this class. Like, that's how I operate. Like, okay, smell the rose. Okay, run. And then, okay, yay, hug it out. Okay, run.
So if my listeners, because I like asking this question near end of stuff. If you could give just a couple of those tools on how you made those shifts to folks who are listening, what would you say?
I would say this. Don't give in to the stereotype. What America sees as a family may not be the family that is for you or the family that you create, i.e. blood family isn't always blood family. Mm-hmm. And all of your skin folk ain't necessarily all of your kin folk. So family will support you, will love you, will celebrate you, will help you grow, will help you cry, will help you laugh, will help you love, will help you hate, will help you be angry. So trust your family and trust those that love you, because they love you enough to tell you, to confirm to you who you are so that you can be who you think you are. My second piece of advice is learn about money, especially as a Black person, because I think that's one of our biggest flaws is financial independence. If you can save money, save the money. If you think you're splurging on something that isn't going to enrich your life long term, don't do it. So that would be my second piece of advice. My third piece of advice in terms of beauty, I think would be don't let people tell you who you are, show them who you want to be. And for me, I give that advice because I've always wanted to be this like strong, pretty diva with delicious hair that's walking with a power walk and stuff. And I would tell people like, this is who I want to be. I want to have my own clothing line. I want to be wearing some fierce outfits. Like I would tell them, this is who I want to be. And so the people who love me listened to that, and they helped me get to that place to where I wear pretty much whatever I want to wear. Like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be working tomorrow on this afro, and they're just going to have to deal with it because I feel beautiful and bold, and I know people aren't going to mess with me. You know, what brings you joy? Tell them what brings you joy. Tell them who you are. Show them who you are. Tell them who you want to be. Tell them who you don't want to be. I don't want to be this mean, ugly person that doesn't forgive and doesn't show mercy. I want to be a loving person that educates, shows love, and shows mercy. I want to forgive. I want to be a forgiving person. Can you help me be a forgiving person? Can you help me be a beautiful person? I don't know how to do it yet, but I see you're beautiful. So you got to it somehow. Can you help me become the beautiful person that I think I am on the inside? I'm pretty sure I'm a beautiful person, but I'm not sure. Can you help me? Can you like, oh, and they will. They'll be like, Ty, you're wearing a fabulous shirt today, girl. You got it going on. I do? Okay, I'm gonna buy like 12 of these shirts then. Because you know, you just said this shirt is awesome, so I gotta buy like 12 of these because I know this one's awesome. You know, oh, that hairstyle is so amazing on you. You look so beautiful. You look so powerful. What? I do? And I know it's true because you love me and I love you and we just have that healthy dynamic bond. yeah, so I'm gonna wear this afro for a while, like, and that's what happened. I'm wearing this afro far longer than I thought I would, but it brings me joy. It reminds me that I'm beautifully Black. And it reminds me that I still have a ways to go in terms of loving my Blackness. And that's a real thing. It's a real thing to talk about your struggles and where you want to be, despite the fact that you're not there currently. So that would be my advice. Like,
that's
those
wonderful.
Are probably the hardest lessons. Yeah.
No, I really appreciate you sharing those. And I super appreciate you coming on the show. It's been awesome and delicious. And I'm excited that between flights and travel and adventures, you were able to make the time.
Oh, my God. Listen. I'm sorry, I have to cancel. I'm sorry, I have to cancel. Okay, I can do it today. Nope, never mind. Okay, tomorrow. Yeah, I'm so glad that I could take the time to share energy with another spiritualist, sex educator, who can rejuvenate and recharge together.
Absolutely.
I enjoy this kind of rejuvenation and recharging so that I can keep fighting the fight and I can keep doing what I do even better because I'm inspired and I have even more ambition now. So I'm like, oh my goodness.
I cannot thank Taisha Best enough for taking the time out of her busy schedule, from hopping around the globe for work as well as for doing everything she does within our community, to have a conversation with me that I am able to share with all of you. If you would like to learn more about all of the different blog posts and events and other topics that we discussed in today's show, please go over to our podcast notes that you can find either on my website, passionandsoul.com, or through a wide variety of different media out there. If you're listening on iTunes, you can find us by looking us up through Lee, L-E-E, Harrington, and subscribing there, or by looking up the Passion and Soul podcast. And until next time, be inspired. Find your own power as who you are in all your complex states. And be authentic to you.